Good evening, folks. This is Carolyn Evers, and I brought along a special friend of mine, Richard.
Good evening, Carolyn. Good evening, everyone. This is Richard.
We're delighted to have you here with us, Richard. And this is one of my favorite times of the week, and I think tonight's show is going to be one of my favorite shows. I've been so intrigued with The Monuments Men, which is a film that Richard Clooney put out.
George Clooney.
And the reason I'm so intrigued with it is so many times during a wartime, there are greedy people who try and take advantage of it and take everything for themselves. But these men were interested in giving back the stolen art and other stolen artifacts by the Germans. They wanted to give it back to the people that it belonged to. And so I've been extremely intrigued by this whole idea of unselfishness. And tonight we're going to have as our guest a gentleman by the name of Ronald Balfour. He was a Monuments Man that was killed during the war, and I am looking forward to what he has to say, and just think this is going to be a remarkable program. So those of you who are familiar with our work, you don't know what Mr. Balfour looked like, but what you can do is concentrate on your third eye and see if you can pick up his vibrations, his energy, and we will ask Richard to describe it for us. Richard.
This man has a gentle energy, not a powerful energy, a gentle energy. I experience it a little left of center. And what I sense about him is this wisdom and compassion and integrity. As I say, not great power, not great love, though love is there. Compassion is a form of love, of course. Gentleness is the word I would best use to describe this man's energy. Very clear, very, very precise, you might say. And very solid, yet gentle. Very interesting energy.
Thank you, Richard. And I suspect that Mr. Balfour has a message for us that he would like to explain to our audience.
I hope so. He's been whispering such in your ear, so let's see what he has to say. It is my pleasure to be here on this radio program tonight with you all. It is a most unexpected pleasure to be able to come forth in this manner and to communicate with you all, both directly and those who listen to the recording in the future. Because there are very few beings that cross over that are given the opportunity to communicate through another individual who is still incarnate, and be able to deliver a message and to answer questions about my experiences and indeed my views on a number of things. So it truly is a wonderful opportunity to be able to be with you all tonight. And I firstly wanted to take a moment to talk about the time in which I lived. As you know, it was wartime at the end of my life, and I was a historian, as many of you may know, and had a great fascination for literature in particular, though I did have a great interest in the arts in general. And so when the opportunity arose for me to participate in identifying some of the artworks of Europe and indeed seeking to protect them ahead of the Germans taking them, I took that opportunity. It was a role that many might consider foolhardy or terribly brave, or however you wish to look at it, in a way putting your life on the line for art. But really, it was a simple choice for me. I understood the legacy of great art and indeed the productive output of people in the past. I had gathered a great collection of books in my time, and this collection, in a sense, was aimed at preserving this historical record of what people had written down. Many of these books were quite rare, and so I collected them to preserve them, to, you might say, keep on record the writings, the thoughts, the wisdoms, the ideals, the ideas of many of these individuals. And so it was not a large step for me to make the connection to seek to identify those artworks in Europe that remained, that could still be protected. As you may know, I gave my life to that work, being killed by a bomb in 1945. And if you have seen the Monuments Men movie, you will know that there was a character, an English character, who went by the name of Donald Jeffries in the movie, who was modeled to some extent on my life, though it was a very loose fit, you might say. Certainly, there was the connection with the what is known as Bruges Madonna, which had been sculpted by Michelangelo, which had been in Bruges in have a mental blank, Belgium. And indeed, it was I who identified in real life that the Bruges Madonna had been taken by the Germans. But the fit was a little loose. The picture shows an individual who was dealing with alcohol problems and had been in trouble with the law as a result, and this is certainly not the case for me. But nevertheless, there are threads of my life that are expressed in that role, and I do not begrudge those who took those threads to add to the story of what I consider to be a fine movie, because it has reawakened many people's awareness of the work that was undertaken by us. As Carolyn said at the beginning of the show, most of those involved in wartime tend not to be operating in an altruistic sense. Yes, they are battling for their country or for the side that they happen to be on, but ultimately it is a very personal experience, a very personal focus of seeking to, you might say, defeat the others before they defeat you, putting a nice flavor upon it. But when it comes to the spoils of war, most tend to grab what they can for their own selfish benefit, regardless of who previously owned those assets or artworks or whatever. And so the project that was put together, that is known today as the Monuments Men, though in truth there were also many women involved. Indeed, some 350-odd men and women were involved in the project in the end. Our focus was to identify those works of art, to track them down and to return them to their rightful owners wherever that was possible. In some cases, it was not possible because the individuals had died during the war. But where it was possible, they were returned to the individuals or the churches or the galleries from which they had been removed. And I am very proud of that effort. And some wonder if I regretted giving up my life for that work, but I have no regret about it because I saw the work as being so important, so valuable. My life is but one life, whereas those artworks have given pleasure, they have given upliftment, they have given guidance in many cases to so many individuals that have come and pondered them since that time. And we are speaking of millions of people in many cases. And so I have no regrets whatsoever in giving up my life for my contribution to the work that has come to be known as the Monuments Men. And I am very proud to have been part of that effort. I wanted to now move on a little and talk about your time, because there truly are many parallels between the time in which I lived, or the end of my life in particular, that is the Second World War, and the time that you find yourselves in, because so many of the same kinds of forces are at work. It is not so directly in your face, you might say, as a world war is, though of course there are many areas of the world that have been completely destroyed by the American military machine. And it is important to recognize that there are powerful forces that are eliminating the freedoms that so many felt that they were fighting for during the two world wars. Of course, most people that participated in those wars had no understanding of the agendas behind those wars. And if you participate in war, it is a very personal experience. And the possibility that you were simply being used as a pawn in a much larger game would be abhorrent to most individuals, and they could not even contemplate such a possibility. They simply look at it at a surface level. Most people that are involved in war are involved at a young time in their lives, and it fashions their lives so completely in so many cases. It is the defining experience of their lives, I'm afraid to say. And so they cannot look behind the surface. And so I say to you, there is tyranny of a very high level active in your world. Freedoms have been removed almost as extensively as they were during Hitler's German rule. And indeed, the treasures of the world are again in so many ways at risk. There is the war currently in Ukraine, which is really in the heart of Europe, you might say, and could so easily spill over in so many different directions. And those who drive these processes have no real regard for human life or the human journey. They are driven by their own agendas, and they have very little to do with the freedoms and the goodwill of humanity in general. And so I wanted to mention this because I'm able to observe from my perspective, these very close parallels. So many freedoms have been taken from humanity in the name of protection after 9/11, that massive false flag event that transformed the Western world on so many levels and was used to trigger the destruction of Iraq, Afghanistan, and many countries since, such as Libya. These countries have been destroyed, their cultures have been destroyed in the name of so-called freedom, but of course that was not at all what it was about. So I mentioned this, and I am saddened to observe all of this unfolding in your time. But also, I want to bring you a message of hope, because I, like so many beings on this side, have been watching the unfolding of events in this time. Many of you who are listening to this show understand that you live in a special time upon the planet. It is that time when you are in alignment with Galactic Center, and it is a moment of great change, and a time of great change it will be. It will be truly the transformation in consciousness upon the planet that so many of you have been awaiting. It will come, my friends. It will come. Trust this truth. I know how difficult it has been for so many of you as you have waited for these changes, but they are truly beginning to creep into your world. Be vigilant. Be alert. You will see the signs. Keep stepping, my friends. And so it is.
That is so beautiful, and I want to thank you, Ronald Balfour, for the message that you gave us. There is something of interest to me, and you're talking about the changes. From your perspective, can you give us some sort of an idea as to the changes that you perceive occurring on Earth?
As you know, there have been much more advanced expressions of civilization and of humanity in your distant past, a past that has been very carefully and deliberately buried. But the evidence of this existence continues to sneak out through the work of individuals such as Graham Hancock and others. And part of that civilization was a much more advanced expression of the human form. The physical body did not age as it does today. Excuse me. There was a perfection that you do not see in the human physical form today. And so many other characteristics. The ability to communicate with other forms of consciousness was simply a natural part of that existence. The ability to manifest from the background energy was available, albeit in a restricted form. So this is part of the human story, the human history that has been buried very carefully, as I say, and very deliberately. And part of the changes that await humanity is a reclaiming of all that existed back in the time of Atlantis and moving beyond it. And so this is the promise that is held for humanity, a promise that was put in place long before the fall in Atlantis, because all of that was planned. And so this transition that awaits you is also carefully planned and will be with you very soon.
Thank you. Can you give us your concept of bravery?
It is an interesting question that you ask, or a notion that you raise. Many people consider bravery in the context of warfare. Bravery being the willingness to perhaps go where most others would not, to do so in the service of your fellow man, and in so doing, move whatever it is that you are part of forward. To many, that is the definition of bravery. But truly, in my view, bravery has a role in every person's life. Bravery, to me, is the willingness to do what you feel is right at any given moment, regardless of the opposition or the opinions of others. That does not mean that you always necessarily do in a given moment exactly what you have chosen to do, because you may take into account the views of others to some extent. But ultimately, I see bravery as being the willingness of an individual to truly live their own lives, undefined by others. In my life, I would consider the work that I was doing to seek to preserve the artistic treasures of Europe as an expression of bravery, but truly it was not something that I focused on. And bravery, you might say, is not something that you actively execute. It is something that you may observe in hindsight, or others may observe about your behavior. But truly, bravery has a role in everybody's life, the willingness to live your own life and to choose what life it is that you wish to lead, and then to lead that life, to live that life. That, to me, is the essence of bravery.
Thank you. Now that you're on the other side, do you work in supporting the arts in some fashion?
It is not my focus, really. I was, you might say, an intellectual first. I happen to have chosen history as my field, but really my interests were very broad in what you might consider an artistic sense, but also an intellectual sense. And so I am more driven by following paths which interest me, to continue to learn and understand and develop my perspective on what it means to be, firstly, a human being, because I was that when I first came forth, but also to understand the journey of the soul, possibilities that that carries in its broadest sense. So, no, I am not primarily focused on the arts, but rather understanding, again, all of the possibilities of what it means to be a human being and to be a soul on a journey.
I find that fascinating. Can you give us a little background thoughts about the soul that's on the journey that you have learned?
As you know, when an individual incarnates on Earth, that individual's monad sends forth a finger of consciousness to incarnate as that individual. That is, that finger of consciousness represents that individual's soul. And once that life ends, that soul, you might say, is set free, though indeed it is free during every period of sleep. And indeed, it can be free of the physical form at other times also, though that is less common. So once that life ends, then the soul is completely free to travel and journey and understand and to grow and to, as I say, investigate the possibilities of what it means to be a soul on a journey, because that soul continues to journey as a finger of consciousness until the time is ready for it to return to the monad at the end of the cycle of Brahma. So there are so many possibilities for that soul to journey. It may stay in a particular level of consciousness for a long period, learning and understanding that consciousness, the knowledge that is held on that level, the understandings, the abilities which are available, and then it can move on to higher levels of consciousness in a manner gradually working its way back towards a monad, and in so doing broadening its understanding and its perspective as it goes. And this is one of the possibilities that exists for a soul that is incarnated as a human being. Really, there is a great deal of freedom for such souls to journey as they choose. Some choose to remain and stay very focused on assisting humanity. Others choose a particular area of work or of interest that they stay very focused upon. Others, like myself, take a much broader perspective, a much more, you might consider, intellectual perspective, to enjoy and investigate and participate in the journey in as many different ways as possible.
Thank you so much. I would like to invite those who are listening to this show. If you have a question, call us at 888-627-6008. And we do have an individual on the line right now that has a question for Mr. Balfour, and that is Helen on line one. Helen, your question, dear.
Yes, good evening. My question is, throughout the human history, so many treasures got lost and destructed. And so based on the theory of holographic or Akashic record, so I'm just wondering, is there any way that, like, the human history can be restored perfect in a perfect way somewhere?
That's an interesting question, Helen. Richard, did you understand that?
Yes, I did. What you raise is an interesting notion. Of course, within the Akashic records, there are indeed detailed records of all of the history of humanity, for example, and that includes all of the treasures, you might consider, which have been lost along the way. And you might consider that these records, in a sense, can be accessed. And I anticipate that there will be those of humanity, when this transition is complete, who choose to access those records, and using their ability to manifest from the background energy, simply bring some of those lost treasures forth back into the human experience. I anticipate there will be those who may do that kind of work, and Helen, perhaps you are one.
That's exciting. What do you think of that, Helen?
That's terrific. That's most excellent and exciting. So
it is
to that day.
Really?
That possibility. Thank you so very much for the show.
So, my friends, we are marching towards the end of the show. And if any of you have a question that you would like to place before Mr. Balfour, please give us a call, 888-627-6008.
Or via your little online devices these days, you can come in directly.
No, I forgot about that. Thank you for reminding us.
That's okay.
Do you want to explain that a little bit, Richard, for those who might wonder about that?
I think those who have downloaded the software for Android or their iPad or iPhone will be well familiar with that possibility. But if those of you who have not downloaded that software wish to do so, you just go and download the VBS radio software, and there you go. You can listen online.
Don't you just love it? The technology today. I know I love it. Richard, you've been working with Mr. Balfour. Do you have a question of him?
I guess a question I have is a couple of questions. One is, does he feel that there were ways that the Monuments Men could have been more effective in their work? And also, have there been similar groups in past conflicts that have done this kind of work?
Interesting thought. Let's see what he says.
To take your first question, such a question is open-ended. There were many areas where we ran into resistance and lack of cooperation. There were, as you mentioned earlier, some 350-odd people involved, and yet really in so many ways it was such a small group trying to do a tremendous amount of work in a short amount of time, because really most of the work needed to be done just as the war was ending, getting to Germany and also the other European countries before the Germans had surrendered, and this was challenging and difficult. And we could have achieved more if we'd had more direct cooperation from the mainstream military. There were, of course, those who cooperated very greatly with us, but there were many who resisted what we were doing, who felt it was a distraction from the main game, you might say. And so that would have helped us be more effective. Also, there were many individuals who could have been part of that effort who chose not to be, and this could also have made us far more effective. The more people we had doing this work in that short time window, the more effective we would have been. Having said that, I do feel that overall the efforts of the Monuments Men were extremely effective in protecting and returning a great deal of Europe's art.
Your words bring up a thought in my mind. Was there art that never was returned, and what happened to that when they couldn't find the owner of the art?
There is a great deal of art that was never returned. Some of it was destroyed by the Germans. Quite a bit was taken to Russia by the Russian group that was tasked with that responsibility. They had no intention of returning the art to the owners, but rather sought to loot it for their own purposes. So some certainly made its way to Russia as a result of those actions. And where it could not be returned to the individuals, then it was made available to the relevant museums. And indeed, there is quite a bit of art that is now present in the major museums that had been privately held before and during the war, and the individuals did not survive the war. To answer the other question which was posed, which is, has there been other points in history where such groups have gathered to seek to protect the artworks, you might say? And indeed, there have been a number of such efforts. If you look at the nature of war, it so often is very destructive to the existing culture, not only the people, but their values, the expressions of their culture. And there have been so many examples of this throughout time where these things have been destroyed. A recent historical example is the destruction of the temples in Tibet by the Chinese, who today, for the most part, regret that action. But it was taken, you might say, on the spur of the moment as an act of vengeance by the military. These things so often occur in this manner. And indeed, there are such actions occurring throughout the world as we speak. And if one looks historically, you can see other examples. For example, the destruction of so many Catholic churches, monasteries, and so on by Henry VIII. So much destruction of, again, primarily religious artifacts and buildings during the French Revolution, and so on. So many examples of this nature. And almost inevitably, there will be a group that comes together that seeks to protect as much of this artwork as possible. Of course, it is very difficult in the face of a tyrannical group, a headstrong, bloodthirsty group that seek to destroy the traces of what they see as being that which suppressed them. And they are not selective in those processes. It does seem to be an aspect of the human behavior. But inevitably, there have been groups of one sort or another that have gathered to try and protect these great treasures as much as possible, regardless of context. There has been so much great artwork that has been held within the context of the Catholic Church. Now, I am not a defender of the Catholic Church in any manner, and you live in a time where you will see the demise of that institution. But nevertheless, within the walls of many of its great buildings, it holds many great treasures that are treasures for humanity, not truly treasures for the Catholic Church. And it is important to do what is possible to protect those beautiful treasures, regardless of the destruction of the context that today owns them.
You have been so informative, and I appreciate everything that you have brought forth, Mr. Balfour. And we congratulate you for everything that you have done. We're coming to the end of the show, my friends. And if you have a question for our guest, give us a call, 888-627-6008. I think Mr. Balfour has answered all the questions that I have, and I suspect that he's answered all the questions that you have, Richard.
I think so, Carolyn, yes. Yes, I believe so.
So from your perspective, there is something I do want to touch on. From your perspective, Mr. Balfour, this movie that was done regarding the Monuments Men, I think has been creating quite an awakening among humanity. Would you say that was accurate?
Yes, I would say that the movie has been a very constructive influence in reminding many people today of the role of the Monuments Men during the ending of the Second World War. It is a well-constructed movie. It is a good attempt to tell an entertaining, fast-moving story built around the fundamental truths that there was a group that went forth to locate, protect, and return these great treasures. Surely it is a movie that, as I say, tells a story. It needs to be put together in a manner which is entertaining, and entertaining it is, but the essence of what it is conveying is true to the spirit and the focus of the monuments then from my time. And so I feel the movie is contributing a great deal in reclaiming that understanding.
Okay, again, thank you, dear friend. We have much to be grateful for with your compassion and understanding words, and for you, Richard, for bringing this forth. We thank you also. Without the two of you, we could not have done this show this evening.
Well, without you, Precious, without your contribution.
It's good to contribute to something so worthy.
Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to just take a moment to remind our listeners of the Knights Templar videos that we have put out there on DVD and Blu-ray. I truly have been humbled by the feedback that we have been receiving, and you may have received my email about that in the last week or so. And it's clear, as is the case with so many of these kinds of things, that the end product operates on many levels. Yes, it is conveying information about the true nature of the Templars and the things that they were doing, but also it seems the recordings carry an energy. They carry, excuse me, an activation that a number of people experience if they have some spiritual awareness. And also, if you were a Templar in a past life or were in some manner involved with them, it is pretty clear that people who have those connections find these recordings very, very moving indeed. And so it's very humbling to be getting this kind of feedback. So you can find those videos at the website True Stories of the Templar of the Templar Knights.com. And again, I'll put a link to that in the email that I send out with the recording.
I remember being a Templar. I remember riding with the Templars, and we sat on our horses so close to one another during a charge that our boots actually touched one another. It was almost practically impossible to overcome a Templar charge. And here was another group who were working for the people. There was much tyranny in the world during that particular time, and individuals had no place to go except for the protection of the Knights Templar.
Indeed. Must have been, excuse me, must have been quite a training exercise to have the horses so well schooled.
I'm losing
my voice very quickly here, Carolyn, for some reason, so I suspect we probably should wrap this up.
And well, so, we have some time yet, Richard.
I know we have some time, but I don't have a voice. If you want to talk about something, you're very welcome.
Well, I would like to mention our soul origin and journey work that we do.
Mm-hmm.
Richard, I forget the website that is on.
SoulOriginAndHistory.com.
That was original. What's so fascinating about that is if people want some sort of a concept of how their soul has been working, in what field, you might say, the soul is working, there is a history there that we give that I find extraordinary, and I think the people who receive it find it extraordinary also. You did put some of these comments on that website, didn't you, Richard?
You mean people's feedback and experiences?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes, there are many readings up on that website, some of them up on YouTube, others just the text, but many examples of feedback from people on those readings.
What is so intriguing about that, and I'll say this since you're having trouble with your voice. When I do one of these readings, it is like I'm in between worlds. And it is like I walk along a path and there are what appears to be like bricks along this path, like a wall. And I pull out of the wall these different bricks that pertain to an individual, and in there are the stories. It's quite fascinating.
It's wonderful that you're able to do that work again.
It is, and I do so enjoy it.
Mm.
Also, this work that Richard does with working with other consciousness, he teaches that to individuals. And for those of you who might want to do some of this work, Richard, that's on Right Brain Magic, isn't it?
Yes, rightbrainmagic.com.
And there are so many consciousnesses that an individual might want to connect with. For instance, friends that maybe you're having difficulties with right now, receiving cooperation, you're able to use some of that Right Brain Magic information and work with that. There's lots of things that we would like to have come into our lives that could use a little pick-me-up, so to say, a little push. It's intriguing if we know the concepts, how much we can influence our futures. And hopefully, my friends, tonight you have enjoyed what we have brought forth. I've been looking forward to this night since we first discussed this with Mr. Balfour. I've been looking forward to actually bringing this history to you. As always, I think of individuals that can come where you would have interest in. And there was another individual from this group that has come to me asking to be on the show and come forward. And Richard will send an email to you explaining all of this. And Richard, how does someone get onto our mailing list?
You just go to the 2012countdown.com website, and you can enter your name and email address on the top or bottom of any page on that website, and you will be added to our list.
That's wonderful. And I'd like to tell you that Richard puts an awful lot of time into sending out the emails and putting all of this information together. And so I'd like to thank you, Richard, for the dedication in what you do. You're the man behind everything, giving support. And so I want to thank you publicly for your strong shoulders.
Thank you, Carol.
Good night, one and all. We'll see you next week.
Indeed. Good night, everyone.